moi qu'on change. Ils n'ont changé.
Alors, ils me le temps quoi.
Fred, hello. How are you? How's life?
I'm good, and you?
I'm fine, yeah.
Yeah,
very
it's
bright,
a sunny
and shiny
day out
yeah.
here.
Yeah, yeah, likewise.
And we went for a little swim. So
oh, good.
The water was about 16, 17. It's not too cold, not too warm.
Ouch.
It's got to be perfect.
It's got to be perfect.
It's got to be perfect, man.
Well, welcome, everybody. This is our third podcast. And as you probably know, our effort here is to find the perfect song for something. In this case, it's the perfect song to impress your friend who you're traveling with in a car who doesn't want to listen to any music. And then you put something on and he says or she says, okay, that's fine. Let's stay with that. Is that more or less right for the definition of our
slightly, I'm slightly different. It's like traveling with a friend who doesn't like your music
okay. And
is scathing about your music. But before we get there, we had a few reactions from our previous podcast, and people find the idea absolutely brilliant, they said. We had a reaction from Cape Town, we had one from New York, we had one from Brighton. So we've been listened all over the world, I could say. And of course, people came with all their own ideas for the perfect song for dot, dot, dot. So the New York person said the perfect song for going to a crucial football match, which I thought was pretty interesting. So we might consider that. And the one from Brighton said perfect song for sitting in a long car drive and the traffic goes very, very slow. And the person from Cape Town said the perfect song before you have to do something that is very difficult and something that you really don't want to do. So
there
we are.
Oh, that's a very good one.
Yeah. So we might get those people in the program. Our idea is to have the occasional guest and let them talk about their three perfect songs. And we will, of course, also add our three perfect songs. So then we'll have nine perfect songs.
Oh, my God, that's incredible. Alrighty, what have you been listening to recently?
The most recent bit I listened to while I was waiting for your link for the podcast was the new Nick Cave song, Wild God.
Okay.
But I haven't finished it yet because then you sent the link. So I can't say it was Nick Cave, Wild God. But from what I heard, which was about a minute in, it sounded very, very good and promising. There's going to be a new Nick Cave album soon. So we are waiting for that. But I've been listening to One Nation Under a Groove by Funkadelic. I don't know if you know the song. It was some sort of hit in, I think, 1978. It features on the same album, One Nation Under a Groove. And I was listening to another podcast by Barney Hoskins, and suddenly I thought, what an incredible song this is. And, you know, last week we talked about disco. And this, of course, was sort of extension of disco. This was funk. And it's got Bootsy Collins on bass guitar, who's an incredible bassist. And what I found particularly interesting is that they said it was inspired, as you can hear, by Sly and the Family Stone, Jimi Hendrix, but also progressive rock. And I thought, this is fascinating, you know, black funketeers listening to white, I mean, how more white can you be than progressive rock? It's the whitest of all music genres. And they just adopt it and play around with it. So I thought, this is perfect. There's no...
Yeah, you don't seem like a sort of funk guy, but I love funk. It's just, it's wonderfully scratchy and fast. And anyway, let's have a listen to the Funkadelics. This is a chance to dance your way.
Shook 'em. Is it yet?
to dance our way out of our constriction. Gonna be freaking up and down the hang up alleyway with a groove I only got.
I mean, I think the thing about funk is that, and disco, I suppose, is that they really introduced the world to the bass. Bass became all of a sudden a major instrument in the mix, and it's very powerful in the right hands. The bass can be sort of more than just, you know, a sort of underpin. It can be sort of give the whole song meaning in itself. That's great.
I would say it's the main instrument in this song. I mean, without that bass, nothing would remain.
Yeah.
And also later on, you know, there's some Hendrix influences in the guitar solos. And I think talking about the structure, you know, it's not your average pop song structure. And I think that's where they got the prog influences, where you just do away with conventional structures and you make it into something much more interesting. So I thought it's a fascinating song. And I've been listening to it a lot. And you, Tim?
Well, I you know me, I'm just a kind of sucker for great lyricist. And the one that I've been listening to recently is this Australian, sort of, she's a kind of punk singer, I suppose you would call it, but she's a sort of folk punk singer, if there's, anyway, her name's Courtney Barnett. She's now very famous and well-known. And then I came across this song, and I wanted to know whether you recognize it. Let me play it.
I'll be your mirror, reflect what you are, in case you don't know. I'll be the wind, the rain and the sunset, the light on your door, to show that you're home. When you think the night has seen your mind, that inside you're twisted and unkind. Well, let me stand to show that you are blind. Please put down your hands, 'cause I see you.
Well, that was an easy one. The first words, I thought, okay, it's the Velvet Underground, I'll be your mirror.
Yes, no, exactly.
By Nico, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. It's interesting that she should be influenced by or do such a great cover version of such an old song. I mean, her own songs are fabulous. Can I just read you some of the lyrics? Because I think it's sort of like there's a role of pop singers to add a little bit of wisdom to the world, you know, and she really does it fantastically. She's got this sort of, you know, unusual, she takes these little fragments of her own life and she puts them into a song and it just becomes mesmerizing. So this is the one, I'm breathing and I'm wheezing. I feel like I'm emphyseming. My throat feels like a funnel filled with Weet-Bix and kerosene. We either think we are invincible or we are invisible, when realistically we're somewhere in between. Isn't that a great little sort of like snippet? I love the, we think we're invincible or we're invisible. Anyway,
you feel it in your throat as well when you read it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Good. Okay. Let's move on to our theme. Our theme. Okay. I'm going to play the song and then you're going to tell us about it. Here it comes.
Okay.
Kiezen voor het normale, voor wel het uit, of voor het onzekere, en spontaniteit twijfels, twijfels, twijfels.
Okay, something from your misspent youth, obviously, Fred.
Yeah, it's a Belgian band, actually, called The Brossers. And they were around late 70s. But I think last year they played their final farewell gig. So they've been sort of disbanding, coming back together again, etc. I haven't been following the last bits of their career. But way back in the late 70s, they were a magnificent band. They came from some small rural place in Belgium, just over the border with Holland, where they were completely unaccepted. And, you know, you can hear they were influenced by bands like Joy Division, but also the Sex Pistols. And they had the dark side of punk. And they walked around in their dark black clothes. And there was a documentary on VPRO television where the reporter went around in that little town of theirs and asked people, "Madam, do you know the Brassers?" And they, "What? What?" And they turned away and they ran away because the Brassers were like associated with everything bad, the drugs and nihilism and right. anarchy. And anyway, so they also played in Utrecht, where I was living. And right. me and my friend Mark, who's the major guy in this little series, because he's coming to visit me soon, and right. we're going to go on a road trip, and I have to play music, and I know all right. sorts of things that are going to happen. He wasn't so into punk rock. You'll right. hear later what he was into. But I took him to the Brassers, and he absolutely loved it. It was like almost a life-changing event. He even wrote a letter to them from Utrecht, and I don't think they ever received it. I asked them later. I once interviewed them, but they couldn't remember receiving a letter. But so this was the one thing we had in common. So I thought, okay. if we go on that road trip and things are a little tense, I'll play this right. song, and things will immediately, you know, you start talking about the past and about things yes. that you did together. Because I know him from my student days. So I know him right. from about 1980, I think, which is 44 years now. And yeah, so he's coming here. I haven't seen him in 2 years, so it's going to be exciting.
Okay, and he'll be impressed that you hooked out the song. But can I just ask, if you played it with somebody else in the car, with, you know, anybody else, would they not jump out of the car? I mean, would they not immediately?
No. I've had people in my car that single-handedly turned down the volume when I was driving them, which I found very, very, very bad. You know, that is bad manners. And I nearly stopped the car and said, okay, get out now. It was a woman. I didn't do it in the end. But, you know, that, and I'm sure this song also, because they sing in Dutch, so you don't understand yes. the lyrics unless you're Flemish. They're quite good lyrics, actually. You know, they're really of that era, like when you're your early 20s and you have to make decisions in life. Are you going to go for the conventional right. or are you going to take a different path? And the song title is Twijfels, which means doubt. You know, so yeah. it's every time he asks a question, am I going for spontaneity or am I going for predictability? Those are the questions that, and then he says Twijfels, which means doubt. So it's a great song. I still love it. I get really chicken skin, like, wow, what a good song okay. this was. And that right. keyboard and droning on, wow. Yeah.
All right. Well, my song is, you know, I mean, when you think about traveling with somebody in a car, the song comes to mind. It's just completely inevitable. And everybody knows and loves the song. There's nobody on the planet Earth that doesn't think that this is a classic.
I've been driving all night, my hands wet on the wheel. There's a voice in my head that drives my heel. It's my baby calling, says I need you here. And it's a 4:30 and I'm shifting gear.
And obviously you love the song because they are a Dutch band. This is Golden Earring, of course. So, I mean, not a fantastically original choice, I would say, but still just completely song. Inevitable.
Yeah.
You know what I didn't know? I always thought, oh my God, I wonder what happened to Golden Earring, you know, because they've always struck me as one-hit wonders. So then I went onto the internet. They're still around. They still play.
No,
they've brought out 25 studio albums. They've had 30 top 10 singles in the Dutch charts. I mean, they're a complete phenomenon. But you say they've broken up.
The guitarist has got some autoimmune disease, and he can't play the guitar anymore. So I think it was last year that they officially announced that after over 60 years. I think they started early 60s, 62 or 63 or something. They started out as like a Beatles sounding band. You know, they sounded like the Beatles and the Zombies and the Birds. And then they got that, when Barry Hay, the singer, joined them, they got much more rock. And they became an incredible rock band. They were a long time when I was a teenager, like 12, 13. They were my absolute favorite band. I loved them. I bought every record they brought out. I bought all the singles, sort of up to 1976, 77. And then I thought they became a bit boring or a bit, you know, they wanted to break in America and then you do concessions. And they had another big hit in America, When the Lady Smiles. But that had a video that the Americans didn't like because it had a nun and sex in it.
terrible comedy.
Terrible, yes. they're a great band. And they're basically, since I started listening to them, which was 1970, they've been the same four guys. Sometimes they had an addition, like a keyboard player or another guitarist. But apart from that, so they've been together in that formation for like, well, since 1970, I think 69 even. So there you go. It's meant like U2. REM had that a bit as well. And the Golden Earring, they're friends for life and they stick together for life, which is quite amazing.
I mean, I listened to their latest album and I had to say I didn't think it was very good.
It's a bump, but why not?
Yeah.
What a bad title.
I know. But I think it's a great car song for a lot of reasons. First of all, there's the obvious reference of driving, right? But also it sort of rolls, you know, it's got a good swing.
Yeah, it's got that driving rhythm
to it. Yeah. And you know it so well, it's impossible not to kind of sing. It's quite a sad song, actually, because, you know, it ends in death, destruction, car accident. You know, so
nearly home.
Yes. All right. This is your second song?
Well, I'm standing in the rain.
You didn't know this one, did you?
No, I didn't, but it's funky. It's sort of
it's good.
It's kind of catchy.
I like the way it starts. Like, they don't waste any time. They go straight into the song. And it's a band called Mega City 4, and they're from the UK. And I think the song was released... Well, it's on an album from 1991, but it was released as a single, I think 1988 or something. I only know the album version. I didn't have the single. But that friend of mine... He's 2 years older, or 1.5 year older. And he was, you know, I was deep into punk in my university days. So that's sort of from 1977 till 1982. And he was slightly aloof. He sort of listened to John Coltrane and he liked the odd, but he was different. You know, he always wanted to be different, look different. He had good features. It was sort of a quiff almost. He was quite skinny, handsome guy. The girls liked him. He played the saxophone. We even were in the band for a little while together, but then one of his lungs collapsed. So that was the end of the saxophone adventure. But he was always, I went to see all these little punk bands in Utrecht and in Rotterdam and in Amsterdam. And he was always a bit sneery about it. And he used to say, Fred, you like those three guys from Birmingham or somewhere. And it always irritated me because I thought, you know, it's such an easy put down, you know, those three guys from Birmingham. So this is four guys from Farnborough, which I had to look up. It's somewhere in the southeast of England. But he would have dismissed these guys as three guys from Birmingham. And I thought it's absolutely pleasant punk pop song that sort of treats the same ground as bands like Green Day would do a bit later. And they were never really discovered. You know, they had a sort of small following. And Green Day, of course, exploded and became the major punk pop band in the world. But no, it's a lovely song. And if we go drive, I'll play it to him and I'll ask him. I'll ask him, did you mean this when you said three guys from Birmingham?
and he'll be wrong right off because A, there's four of them, and B, they're from Farnborough.
They're from the south.
Yours. Good. All right. So I'm thinking, I'm in the car, the person that I'm with, we're driving, the person that I'm with doesn't really want to listen to music, you know. So what about an instrumental? What about an instrumental that is completely catchy and is easy to listen to and it just flows over you, you know, and it's completely inoffensive and it's impossible to criticize in any way. And so I came up with this very old song, very popular. You know, it's a strange song. I mean, this is Booker T and the MGs, and the song is called Green Onions. And you know, nobody has ever known, you know, why it should be called Green Onions, because there's no lyric. But it was a sort of the most unlikely hit. It started out as the B-side of the actual song. The band only wrote it because they were waiting for the singer who hadn't pitched up, so they were just jamming. And, you know, it has that kind of very jammy feel to it, you know, it's a very, you know, 1-4-5 structure. And what I really love about it is that it's actually named after one of the band members' cat, who was called Green Onions. I mean, you
know, oh, really?
yes. Anyway, and I don't see how anybody could ever object.
This also harks back to our Otis Redding inclusion a couple of episodes ago, because this was also from Memphis.
Right.
And Booker T and the MGs were like the studio band in the Memphis and Stax studio, and they played on
a trillion other.
They were incredible musicians. And also, we didn't get there in this clip, but there's an incredible guitar solo in this as well, which is quite sharp. And they were a racially mixed band, black and white members, which is also interesting. I mean, it's an old song. It's from when? Late 60s, early 70s?
62
now.
Yeah. You know, the theory is that the Green Onions was a reference to marijuana. And they kind of denied it at the time, you know. But when you listen to the song, you think, I mean, these guys were completely stoned, obviously. I mean.
Absolutely right, Tim.
Yeah, it's shocking when that happens. I know.
I thought it was much later. Yeah, it's a 12-bar blues. You're right.
Yeah.
I'm just looking up something about Green Onions, and it says, according to Cropper, who was the guitarist, the title is not a marijuana reference. Rather, the track is named after the Green Badger's cat.
I know. That was one of the band members.
Whose way of walking inspired the riff.
I know, it's another great little aspect of the song.
But yeah, no, I wouldn't be surprised if it was actually about something else.
Yes. All right. Yeah, complete change of style and history, etc.
I want to wake up in a city that doesn't sleep and find I'm king of the hill, top of the heap. These little town blues are melting away.
Yeah.
So why this? This is just so different for you, Fred. I'm astounded.
Well, let's say this is not my choice. But okay. I thought, you know, if I drive with this friend and I want to appease him and not sort of start saying, can you listen to something else? Or, Fred, could we please switch off the music for a while? You know, that's I fear is going to happen. And but he always made, we did our field work together way back in 1982. in Mexico, in Chihuahua, northern Mexico. And of course there, you know, you were stuck, three of us were stuck in the same house, one cassette recorder, and usually it was my tapes that sort of dominated. But every once in a while, he got a chance and he pretended, I don't know if it's true or not, I found it very odd, but he really said he liked Frank Sinatra a lot. And one night we were in a sort of discotheque in Chihuahua. I mean, that sounds more glamorous than it was. And, you know, they don't play very good music. And then suddenly a song, a Frank Sinatra song came on, and I think it was New York, New York. And he went to the dance floor. He had a few drinks. So, you know, he was a bit tipsy, probably. And then he sort of stood there. I mean, the whole dance floor cleared. Nobody was going to dance to this bloody song except him. Stood there all alone on the dance floor, eyes closed, hugging himself, dancing to this Frank Sinatra song. So it left a huge impression on me, obviously. So I thought, well, we must include old Frank, old Blue Eyes, in this top three as a tribute to my friend Mark.
I mean,
I started liking Sinatra. I mean, I can hear he's an excellent singer. His voice and the way he controls it is very, very difficult, and he does it so well. It's just the kind of music that I never, ever, ever listened to. You know, Dean Martin, Frank Sinatra, all those guys. It was way beyond what I liked and probably still is.
Yeah, I also don't listen to Frank Sinatra a lot, but when I do, I'm always impressed. I mean, he has that wonderful sort of, it's almost like he speaks singing. You know, it's a very unusual thing. It's almost like he's having a conversation with you, and he just happens to be singing,
standing next to you.
Yeah. And
his eyes.
Yes. And his phrasing is fantastic. He really contrasts with the big band so well, you know, because, you know, he takes it down a notch. It's all casual and intimate. And that's, I think, what set him apart from, you know, all of the other singers of his age,
who
are much more singers first and foremost, you know, and perhaps why he lasted so well. You know, because he was sort of singing songs written by other people you know, and so many songs were written at that time. He was singing some of the Tin Pan Alley sort of creations, I think. He had a great choice. So his song choices themselves were just fantastic.
He also made some tragic records. I did buy some of his albums. You come across them sometimes for like 10 rand, which is about half a euro. And when I see them, I always buy them. And I love the covers as well. They're so of their time, you know, like a drawing of Frank with a hat, and there's somebody standing alone in the rain. And, you know, there's a kind of atmosphere that speaks from those record sleeves that appeals. And then I play them, and I think they're actually really good. I mean, this was pop music for its time. And, I mean, he's a bit of a controversial guy, of course. There was alleged links with the mafia, and It's a New York that I've never known. You know, the first time I went to New York was, I guess, sort of in the early 80s. And this is a New York from the 50s and 60s. So you sort of try to imagine New York, Mad Men, you know, the series Mad Men.
Yes, yes.
It's that kind of New York where the city's coming up, and you got advertising guys, and you got bars where tough boys lean on the bar stool and have their whiskey and talk to beautiful women who look very glamorous. You know, that's the image I get from Frank Sinatra.
I know. Yeah. all right. This is my coup de grace, I think. I mean, I just think it's a completely irresistible song. And it's appropriate for cars, because I just think if you're traveling, there's one instrument that is just absolutely crucial, absolutely, totally crucial. And that instrument is the cowbell. And this song happens to use the cowbell with real panache. Take a listen.
I deny the love, hanging on with push and shove. Possession is the motivation that is hanging up the whole damn nation. Looks like we always end up in the
right, this is compared to what? This is the El Giro version, which I think is the best. There are thousands of versions of the song. It's a very old song. It was written by Gene McDaniels. It was as a protest song. It was a kind of anti-Vietnam song. But the thing about it is that it's just irresistible. It wasn't El Giro's greatest song. It became famous after Roberta Flack did a version, but it's a very different version. There's a lot of versions of it afterwards that were very on the lines of what El Giro did. But very clever song, a mixture of jazz and pop. And some funk. Yeah. And from a musical point of view, very complex, much more complex than you might think, but held together with this kind of scratchiness and the sort of irresistible beat and, you know, the cowbell.
I must say, I didn't so hear the cowbell, but I thought you were going to come with Honky Tonk Woman when you said the cowbell, which is famous for its cowbell, of course.
Yeah. No,
but
no, no,
I actually, you know, El Giro was quite big in the late 70s, I think, right?
Yeah.
And in those days, I didn't give him much space. Friends of mine liked him, friends who were sort of into fusion and jazz, and they always, I think he did some, is it called scatting, where you sing without saying words? That's what he did as well, wasn't it? And I remember a record with a green cover and him sitting there, which was quite big. There was another guy around the same time, Michael Franks. The people who listen to El Giro also listen to Michael Franks, and I didn't enjoy Michael Franks either. So, but I think it's a good choice, Tim. I think certainly where you live, up there in the mountains in the Karoo, and you drive over those lonesome roads in the semi-desert, this is perfect music for taking a friend and showing him or her the area.
Yeah, I mean, I've never been a great El Giro fan either, but I did listen some time ago to an interview done by the two songwriting experts that you actually introduced me to, and it was an absolutely fantastic interview. The interviewers they go by the name of the Soda Jerker. They are, you know, they're both Geordies from the English Midlands. So you
wouldn't expect they.
Scousers. Okay, sorry. Is that
No, the Georgies are Newcastle.
Sounds the same to me. But anyway, whatever. but he was just in the interview. He was just lovely. I mean, he sort of broke into song several times. You know, just he was just irresistibly just a kind of fountain of music and humor and laughter. So quite old at that point, right? This was, you know, 10 years ago when the interview was
done. Because he died in 2017. So
yeah. But and he was, as you said, a sort of a strange mix from LA. His first love was jazz, obviously, but he liked great pop songs. He wrote some very memorable, you know, straight up and down love songs, and was very into that kind of LA sound, a very kind of smooth, easy,
slick,
sort of rooted around the electric piano, I think.
Did you see him in USA for Africa in the documentary that came out recently?
I didn't. I mean, he did take part. You know, he was one of those people who were very heart in the right place. He did take part in that We Are the World.
You know, you must watch it because he's very drunk in the documentary and he can't reach the high notes. And he's very funny. I think it's also him who starts doing a tribute to Harry Belafonte and everybody joins in. And he's very jolly and merry. And, you know, it was after some award ceremony, after midnight. And, of course, they had been drinking and doing stuff. It's a bit odd, though. You know, you do this tribute for starving children in Africa and you're there appearing drunk in a documentary. But anyway.
Yes.
But apparently the British version, Do They Know It's Christmas, status quo, got out a whole pile of cocaine that we were all doing while singing Do They Know It's Christmas Time at all there. So I think that's one step worse than being
yes, and just being merely drunk.
White Christmas, it was there in that studio.
Yes, I said yes, no, exactly. All right,
to select one, eh?
Yeah, I mean it's very difficult actually because we, as usual, we've got such a ridiculous mix of songs. Mm. How do you know what's the best?
Well, let's start with eliminating. I'll eliminate right. Mega City 4.
I will eliminate Radar Love on the basis that it's too obvious.
Yeah. Okay, I agree. Then I'll eliminate one from you.
Okay.
Then I will eliminate El Jero.
Okay. All right. And then I'll eliminate one from you. And I'm afraid it has to be De Brosses, just because I can't understand it. I know that you love it very much, but it's a bit of a blank for me. Sorry about that.
Well, then I think we're going to have to go for Green Onions.
I wouldn't mind going for New York. It is an impressive song, but let's go for Green Onions. You're not going to go wrong.
No, exactly. It's a song everybody will like, at least. And it's a good song, and it's got a nice rhythm. So I think it's the perfect song.
Okay. Good enough. Fred, thanks very much. That was good fun.
No, we got one more thing to do, Tim.
Oh, yes, of course. We have to decide what we're doing next week.
Next week, yeah.
And it's your turn. I know, it's my turn, and I didn't think about it. And I'm very glad that you mentioned some of the suggestions right at the beginning, because actually I love the one about the song that you have to choose before you go and do something very difficult. Let's do that.
Okay.
It's a good challenge.
Okay, we'll do that.
Okay, and let's go out with Green Onions. Cheers, Fred. Thanks very much.
Cheers. Bye-bye.